Hello and welcome to Science World. Greg Flakus reports on a cybersecurity conference that was recently held in Houston, Texas. Apple unveiled its brand new Apple Watch this past Monday. Science World's Doug Bernard will tell us about this new wrist-worn timepiece that doubles as a miniature computer with multiple applications. And researchers from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, along with Canada's University of New Brunswick, are conducting a joint research project to look for and study interference-producing irregularities in the Earth's ionosphere that can affect the global positioning system. Dr. Richard Langley from the University of New Brunswick, Canada, is a member of that team, and he'll tell us about what he and his colleagues hope to learn from the project. We'll have these stories and more on today's edition of VOA Science, Health, and Technology Magazine, Science World. Cyber intrusions into government and corporate information and control systems can cripple vital services and bring normal commerce to a halt. A cybersecurity conference was recently held in Houston, Texas. Greg Flakus tells us what is being done to stop these threats.
When Hurricane Sandy struck the New York City area in 2012, thousands of people were stranded without vital services like electricity and transportation as repair crews struggled to get systems back up and running. Every day, malicious hackers threaten a similar disaster as they probe the computers that control those systems. Concern over such threats, as well as criminal intrusions, brought representatives from government and the private sector together at the Chertoff Group's Cybersecurity Conference. A particular concern here in Houston is the threat to energy systems. Former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff is executive chairman of the sponsoring organization.
We have found malicious code malware on energy systems. Whether that was there to steal information or to do reconnaissance for attacks is more a matter of speculation. Saudi Aramco was attacked, and that's an energy company. It didn't succeed in knocking them offline, but it certainly indicated that energy companies are a target for this.
Chertoff says there will likely be more threats to energy industry control systems by terrorists and some hostile foreign governments. Stuart McClure, CEO of Cylance, says his company's software protects clients from most threats. But Cylance itself is often a target of sophisticated intrusions.
And the only ones that can do that effectively are very large nation states with big budgets, a lot of people, a lot of eyeballs to take a look at what we've done and try and bypass us.
Experts say that technology offers only part of the solution and that constant vigilance is needed to maintain cybersecurity. Companies provide security training to warn against such common breaches as plugging an unverified USB thumb drive into a network computer. The CEO of cybersecurity firm SS8 Inc., Faisal Lakhani, says the human factor is important because technological solutions tend to be too restrictive.
Our economy and the internet is based on this interconnected model, the ability to communicate broadly, to share ideas. And when you restrict that through a technology solutions, you fundamentally take away that inherent advantage that we've had here in America.
He says SS8 offers companies software that analyzes all communication from the internal network to spot threats before an attack is launched, which he says could provide vital protection to energy companies.
The energy industry, once you take down an infrastructure, it takes significant periods in time to get it back up. And that in itself is exactly what we're talking about, is a shift that's necessary to be able to be more predictive about what is going on before the attack actually occurs.
Lakhani says humans in any organization will make mistakes that allow cyber intrusions, and he says companies need to accept that reality and develop methods of identifying and counteracting threats. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Houston.
There are currently no effective treatments for Alzheimer's disease, the neurodegenerative disease which causes severe dementia. But researchers at Johns Hopkins University hope that a drug now being used to treat seizures can improve memory in the early stages of Alzheimer's, even reversing the condition. Jessica Berman reports.
Levetiracetam, which goes by the brand name Keppra, is part of the drug arsenal used to treat epilepsy. The anti-seizure medicine seems to quiet the part of the brain called the hippocampus that's overactivated in those with Alzheimer's. The hippocampus is involved in memory. Arnold Bakker is a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins.
What the medication does is it normalizes this increased activation, this dysfunctional activation. And when you do that, it turns out that you improve their memory function. People who take the medications, memory function is improved compared to when they're not on the medication.
Bakker and colleagues conducted a study involving 84 participants, 17 of whom were normal, healthy, older adults. The others had symptoms of pre-dementia. The average age of the subjects was 70. Researchers found there was a significant improvement on memory tests in those given a very low dose of the drug, between 1/10 and 1/15 of the dose used to treat epilepsy, compared to participants who got placebo. Bakker hopes that levetiracetam might be able to stop the mental decline seen in patients suspected of having Alzheimer's.
The idea is to treat as early as possible to prevent the onset of brain damage that results from the disease process.
Bakker says the long-term benefit of the drug still needs to be established, but he's excited that a treatment for Alzheimer's may have been found.
You know, I'm a research scientist, so I'm always sort of careful. We need to do some more studies, but so far this is extremely promising as far as I'm concerned, and we are very excited about it.
The medication dose needed to treat Alzheimer's is very small, but Bakker says it's currently only available in the higher dose used for epilepsy treatment. A study of the drug was published in the journal Neuroimage Clinical. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Apple revealed its newest gadget this week. Science World's Doug Bernard has more.
U.S. technology giant Apple Incorporated unveiled its latest innovation, the Apple Watch, a wrist-worn timepiece that doubles as a miniature computer with multiple applications. Apple CEO Tim Cook introduced the new device at an event held on Monday, March 9th, at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts Theater in San Francisco.
The Apple Watch is the most personal device we have ever created. It's not just with you, it's on you. And since what you wear is an expression of who you are, we designed Apple Watch to appeal to a whole variety of people with different tastes and different preferences. But the one thing is consistent, we crafted each one of them with the care you would expect from Apple and used incredibly beautiful materials.
The least expensive model of the new device is expected to be priced around $350, with some 19-karat gold models possibly costing $10,000 or more. It's expected to be available in stores next month. Cook said Apple Watch users would be able to make calls, read their email, listen to music, and monitor personal workouts. Some financial analysts think the company could sell anywhere between 8 million to 18 million Apple Watches in the first year. Several other technology companies, including South Korea's Samsung and LG and Japan's Sony, have already introduced their own smartwatches. But Apple is hoping that its first new product line since the 2011 death of company founder Steve Jobs will catch on with consumers already accustomed to using its iPhones and iPad tablets. For Science World, I'm Doug Bernard.
It's time for the Science World Quick Quiz. NASA launched a rocket containing four unmanned spacecraft that were designed to study the magnetic relationship between the Earth and Sun on Thursday. The magnetospheric multiscale spacecraft are expected to fly in pyramid formation in an oblong orbit and will provide 3D views of a mysterious phenomenon where the magnetic fields of Earth break, reconnect, and explosively reconfigure again. From the following, what is the name of this phenomenon? Is it A, magnetic polarization, B, magnetic field condensation, or C, magnetic reconnection? Think about it. We'll have the right answer for you in just a few minutes from now.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the internet. Our webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
An airplane that just uses the power of the sun began its planned trip around the world this past week. Science World's Philip Alexiou tells us more.
A solar-powered Swiss airplane took off from Abu Dhabi early this past Monday on the first leg of what its creators hope will be the first around-the-world journey without any fuel. The carbon-fiber single-seater Solar Impulse 2 aircraft has a 72-meter wingspan, which is longer than the wingspan of a Boeing 747, and weighs about as much as a car. The 17,000 solar cells built into the wings harness the sun's energy, allowing it to fly through the night. The SI-2 took 12 years to build and is the brainchild of two Swiss scientists, Bertrand Piccard and André Borschberg. Borschberg is excited about the challenging mission.
I guess we are both in a level of excitement which is special, but excitement and also concentration and simply happiness.
Borschberg is a trained fighter pilot and a professional airplane and helicopter pilot. Piccard is a psychiatrist and explorer who made the first ever nonstop around-the-world balloon flight. The two say they are not out to revolutionize the aviation industry, but are instead aiming to demonstrate that actual alternative energy sources and new technologies can achieve what some consider impossible. The aircraft's route includes stops in Oman, India, Mandalay, Myanmar, and China. After crossing the Pacific Ocean via Hawaii, the plane will also make three stops in the U.S. The final legs after crossing the Atlantic include a stopover in southern Europe or North Africa before arriving back in Abu Dhabi in late July or early August. For Science World, I'm Philip Alexiou.
Graphene is often called the material of the 21st century because of its special properties. Some U.S. companies are already using graphene for advanced technological products. George Putich visited one such company close to Washington, D.C.
Graphene is often described as a one-atom thick layer of carbon with strict geometric structure and some extraordinary properties. It is 100 times stronger than steel of the same thickness, conducts heat and electricity efficiently, and is nearly transparent.
This material has so many potential applications that you don't know where to start to look in the beginning.
Dan Schaefer, vice president of Vorbeck Materials, says pure graphene is hard to manufacture, but graphene of lesser purity can be made, and it still keeps many of its features.
So cannot be perfect, will not be 100% single sheets, but our production is providing more than 80%, that it's amazing purity, actually.
If you mix graphene into a paint, you can print flexible, electrically conductive components, such as antennas for radio frequency identification circuits. The manager of the product's development team, Louise Brooks, says graphene is also suitable for wearable electronic garments.
You can throw it in the washing machine, you can throw it in the dryer, and it'll survive those cycles, but it'll also survive sort of normal wear and tear from just running around as you wear your clothes.
There's another special application for the new material, extra-sensitive microphones. Engineer Ray Sauro says this graphene membrane, less than 1 micron thick, can pick up vibrations no other membrane can.
It has a working range of less than 1 hertz to 200,000 hertz. The human ear, for example, can hear from about 15 hertz to 20,000 hertz, so way beyond anything you can hear.
The sound is picked up as a change of light reflected off the vibrating graphene membrane, so there's no radio or magnetic interference. Sauro says graphene membranes can withstand vibrations and heat and are cheap to manufacture, so he envisions applications in the automotive industry for monitoring the health of car engines. The cost, he says, would not be more than $300. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Flying across time zones can throw off your biological clock, sometimes for days. Roseanne Skirbel tells us about a new study that allows scientists to follow the mechanics of jet lag in real time.
Our bodies respond to light. It's the most powerful environmental cue for resetting our biological clock. The same is true for fruit flies, says Logan Roberts, a PhD student at the University of California, Irvine, and lead author of the study. In lab experiments, he and his colleagues removed the brains from genetically engineered fruit flies and kept the brains alive in petri dishes. They used flashes of light to offset their circadian rhythm by 2 hours, then studied the responses. Using an extremely low-light-sensitive camera, they could see activity in individual neurons.
The activity is measured by the amount of light these single neurons emit. They have firefly gene engineered into these flies so that when these cells are active, they actually literally light up in the brain, and we can measure that activity.
The study in the journal Current Biology is the first to document in real time how specific neurons react to light cues that simulate rapid travel across time zones.
And we can see that some of these cells change their activity when a light is shown directly on them. They actually become desynchronized amongst the groups and within the groups. So that sense of desynchronization or that lack of, again, when you feel it's out of whack with the environment after you experience jet lag, your nervous system actually reflects that same thing of becoming desynchronized within itself.
Robert says in that state, communication between certain neurons weakens. That's not necessarily a bad thing. He says using light therapy to temporarily reset your biological clock ahead of travel could help reduce symptoms when you arrive at your destination.
We believe that if we can harness that and actually use that to induce this desynchronization, this weakening of communication between these cells before jet lag, before, say, you would travel rapidly across time zones, we believe that could actually accelerate recovery from jet lag.
Robert says the model used to study jet lag in fruit flies could be applied in other human conditions. When our body clock is disrupted, he adds, we are put at greater risk for diabetes, cancer, and neurological diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Let's see if you have the correct answer to this week's Science World Quick Quiz. The 4 magnetospheric multiscale spacecraft launched by NASA on Thursday will fly in pyramid formation in an oblong orbit to provide 3D views of a mysterious phenomenon where the magnetic fields of Earth break, reconnect, and explosively reconfigure once again. From the following, what is the name of this phenomenon? Is it A, magnetic polarization, B, magnetic field condensation, or C, magnetic reconnection? The answer is C, magnetic reconnection. The mechanisms of this phenomenon are what drive those spectacular displays of colored lights known as auroras that can be seen near each of the Earth's poles. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
A lot of people have come to depend on the Global Positioning System, or GPS, to help keep them from getting lost as they travel. But sometimes, irregularities can develop in the ionosphere. That's the outer region of the Earth's atmosphere, packed with a high concentration of free electrons that can affect the transmission of radio signals. These irregularities are thought to produce interference between the GPS satellite and the receivers we use on the ground. This interference can affect the accuracy and dependability of our GPS units. So, researchers from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, along with Canada's University of New Brunswick, are conducting a joint research project to look for and study these irregularities in the ionosphere so that a solution to the GPS interference problem can be developed. Dr. Richard Langley from the University of New Brunswick is one of the researchers involved in this project. He joins us today for our one-on-one segment to talk about what he and his colleagues hope to learn from their study.
The ionosphere actually is a layer in the Earth's upper atmosphere, about 350 kilometers or so above the Earth's surface, where electrons exist as a result of solar radiation, primarily ultraviolet light coming from the sun, it hits the Earth's atmosphere, and the electrons are removed from their parent atoms and molecules so that they can exist more or less freely in a kind of a soup of electrons and ions. Now, the ionosphere is not the same everywhere. It varies both in location and over time. Usually, the ionosphere is well-behaved, but sometimes the ionosphere can get disturbed. This happens when the sun emits what's known as a coronal mass ejection of high-energy particles, and these eventually reach the Earth and through an interaction with the Earth's geomagnetic field and the Earth's atmosphere, we end up with a disturbed ionosphere. And so we can have then irregularities occurring in the ionosphere. Our recent results actually show that these irregularities are different in the different regions of the ionosphere. So in the polar regions, they seem to be different in size than in the auroral zone, which is the region where the auroras are most commonly seen. And they would be different again from mid-latitudes where a lot of us live. What we're basically seeing is changes in the density of electrons, that is, how many of these electrons exist in any one place. It's being able to measure, to monitor those irregularities, how big they are, where they occur, when they occur, will enable us to learn more about how the ionosphere actually works and how it relates to the radiation coming from the sun and the Earth's magnetic field. And when, for example, we get an outburst from the sun, how will the ionosphere respond? We can't yet predict very well what the response of the ionosphere will be, how the ionosphere will change, how it might, for example, disturb the reception of GPS signals. So we need to learn a lot more about the ionosphere. And our recent study, I think, helps a little bit in that regard.
What did you learn?
What we learned, and we learned this actually by using GPS signals themselves. You know, we can use GPS for determining where we are, for positioning, for navigation, for getting us from one place to another. We can use it for accurate timing. So these are all kind of conventional ways of using GPS signals. But the GPS satellites are much higher than the ionosphere. So the signals from the GPS satellites have to come down through the ionosphere to receivers on or near the Earth's surface. And they actually pick up information about the ionosphere. The ionosphere actually slows down the speed with which the radio signals travel, just a little bit. And that has an effect on determining positions using those GPS signals. Now, most of us don't see the effect of the ionosphere because it's fairly small compared to the positioning accuracies that we usually get. But there are high-precision users of GPS, such as surveyors, geodesists, other scientists, which are interested in getting the highest possible accuracies. And they have to contend with this effect of the ionosphere, and they try to correct for it. One easy way to do that is to use both of the frequencies that are transmitted by the GPS satellites. You can actually combine the two signals or the measurements made on those two signals and essentially remove the effect of the ionosphere. But those self-same signals and the same observations, if they're processed in a slightly different way, you can actually extract out the information about the ionosphere. So we can use GPS as a tool for studying the ionosphere and for looking at irregularities in the ionosphere.
That was Dr. Richard Langley of the Geodetic Research Laboratory at the University of New Brunswick in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. The address again is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.